Good morning. I am Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net on the beautiful campus of Seton Hall University. Today, we're so happy to have in our studio today Mr. Doug Moran, who is the author of his book, If You Will Lead, Enduring Wisdom for the 21st Century Leaders. This book was released June 1st of this year. He is the founder of If You Will Lead, LLC, and his firm focuses on leadership development, executive coaching, and infrastructure strategy. His book and much of his leadership guidance comes from the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Really nice to be here.
You know, I'm so happy that we're able to get together to talk about this very, very exciting book for my leadership program here. If you could you share with our audience some of the highlights of your education and experience?
Well, I have my bachelor's degree from James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I graduated in 1987. And after I graduated, I started with Bell Atlantic, which is now Verizon. Spent about 8 years there in a variety of roles. And it was during that time when I was at Verizon that I discovered a lot of the works of Rudyard Kipling, and that was when I should say rediscovered it. But I spent 8 years there, and after that I left the private sector and spent 4 years in government working in the administration of Governor George Allen for the Commonwealth of Virginia, where I spent half the time doing technology work, and the other time I was running the Department of Social Services, which was a real odd move for me, but it was one of those great decisions that I made, or great opportunities that presented itself in one's career. After Governor Allen left office, I went back to the private sector and spent 10 years with Capital One, and the last role I had there, I was divisional CIO for Capital One's Capital One's financial services division. So, as you can, you can tell, much of my career was in the field of technology. That's where I cut my teeth professionally. It's where I really found a great deal of fulfillment. But what really got me going was the field of leadership. And so, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I left Capital One and started my own firm. And that's also when I really got into the process of writing the book.
And when did you discover your passion for leadership? What led you to say, you know, I've done government work, I've done the corporate environment work, now I'm going to do my own business, but I really want to focus on leadership?
Well, it's interesting. I had a friend of mine, a colleague, who used to had a great practice. Every Sunday night before the week began, he would look at his calendar. And, you know, the process really was something I adopted because it was a great way to say, am I doing the things, or am I investing in the things that really matter most and are strategically important to me and to the company. And so this was something I started probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And as I said, every Sunday night I'd look at my calendar for the week ahead and figure out what I was going to be doing. And I found myself getting really excited about the days when I had a lot of work on my plate that surrounded leadership development. And, you know, as a corporate executive, as a fairly senior person in the organization, I was asked to mentor a lot of people. I also spent a lot of time doing skip-level meetings, meeting with large groups of folks. And those meetings, you know, often were primarily focused in the area of leadership development. What would it take for this person to move ahead and get to where they wanted to be and achieve their goals? And so, you know, it was funny. It was just a realization I came to that was what really was getting me going and what was making me most happy in my life. And, you know, I was working with a coach at the time that I made this, came to this realization. And, you know, she helped me figure that out. And it was a great experience, a great realization that this is what I believe I was called to do.
You know, leadership, everyone talks about leadership and the importance of leadership, but I find that oftentimes within organizations, they do not really invest the dollars necessary to help individuals to really grow. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I think it's not just organizations. It's, you know, it's easy to point our fingers at the organizations and say they're not investing enough in their people and in their leadership development. But you know, it's as much about us as individuals. It's hard. It's hard to invest in ourselves in the area of leadership because it sometimes feels a little bit hard to nail down and say I'm going to do this for the sake of that. You know, when you work on your technical skills or the things that are the competencies that help you do a job, technically well and be proficient, you can see the immediate benefits. Leadership, the benefits pay back over a long period of time, and so we as individuals don't invest enough in ourselves, and therefore the companies we work for, the corporations we work for, don't do it either. And those that do are typically the companies that are outpacing their competition. And I had the privilege of working for Capital One, for example, and they were extraordinarily committed to investing in leadership development. And that's, you know, those are the kind of companies I like to work with, are companies that do have the commitment to leadership development.
So it was that excitement that you received when you were working for Capital One as an employee working on different leadership programs that prompted you to step out with your own company.
Exactly, yeah. It's funny. I left a company that was doing it well, so hopefully I could do it, take that and spread it around.
And the name of your company is very interesting. Can you share with us how you came about to name your company?
Well, the name came from the title of the book. I had a working title going when I had first started the book back in 2008, and the publisher that I ended up signing with, Agate, liked it a lot and kept the title, which I was happy about. But when I started thinking about, okay, what am I going to name my company, it just felt like that the book that I was writing was really capturing my leadership philosophy and who I, you know, how I wanted to approach leadership, how I wanted to teach leadership, how I wanted to help people become better leaders were really captured by the book itself. And so the title really made sense to move over to become the name of the company. And, you know, the title is important. The first word is important on many levels. It's important because of the poem, If, that the book is based on.
Yes.
It's also important because there's a lot of uncertainty around leadership. You know, one of the things you'll hear me say time and again is that everybody is a leader. And I believe that absolutely. Not that everybody can be a leader, but everybody is a leader. At some point in our life or another, in the right circumstances, everyone can step up and be a leader or will be expected to step up and be a leader. How well we do that, you know, the quality of leadership that we provide is what's in question, and that's where the if comes in. If we're going to lead, are we going to lead well? And so it's really a question I put to my clients, to anybody reading the book, is if you will lead, you know, are you going to lead well? And so that's where the title came from, and that's where the name of the company came from.
Oh, that is excellent. That is truly, truly excellent, because I wondered about, you know, your title and how you came about that title. And for the benefit of our audience, would you mind if I read or if you read the poem If so that they can get a sense of what we're talking about?
Oh, sure. I'll be happy to read it. I love it. It's okay. One of my favorites. We could do it the way Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal did it, you know, for the commercial for Wimbledon a few years ago, in 2008. They actually did it one line after the other, but that would be a little hard unless we practice, I guess.
That's so. Right. That's right. we'll let you do it.
All right. So here you go. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word of your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that is in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
Wow. I tell you, I get choked up.
I do too, yeah.
I'm thinking back to my sister, Libby, who gave me that poem, and how that poem helped me to lift myself out of the depression that I was in as a sophomore in high school and went on to achieve great things. So thank you for that. That's very nice. And one thing I didn't realize, I've always had this poem, but I didn't realize that he wrote it in 1895.
Right.
And it's just timeless.
Right. He sat on it for 15 years, which I thought was interesting, and I've never found anything that says why Kipling didn't publish it until 1910. But it was originally written as a response to a battle that led to the Boer War. But it was something he I think loved, and it was one of his favorite poems. But he didn't publish it for quite a while.
Fascinating. That is fascinating. I wonder how many drafts he had of this poem. I just wonder what motivated him to write this poem.
Well, the thing that motivated it, it's interesting. It's a great. There's some great myths and there's some great legends around it. The thing that the impetus for it was something called Jameson's Raid. It was a raid of English settlers against. A group of Boer settlers in South Africa, but the thing that inspired it, but the thing that I've read that actually made that was driving Kipling to write it, and the person he was describing, some say it was George Washington, and part of the myth and the legend around that is that where it appears in the book it was published in, he published it in a book called Rewards and Fairies. It was a collection of short.
3, 2, 1.
So, you know Brad Stevens. He's the head basketball coach for Butler University. And before the NCAA basketball championship last year, he read the poem If to his team to inspire them.
Right.
And, It was pretty exciting for me as I was in the middle of writing the book and so I reached out to him and asked him if he'd give me a quote and he gave me a great quote about the poem in particular and how important it was in his life and like you with your sister getting a copy of the poem from her and me getting it from my mother, his mother had given it to him. Wow. and it was because it was such an important part of his life, and that's the timelessness of the book and the poem is what inspired me to write this book, and that's where the subtitle of Enduring Wisdom, that this has been around for 116 years, and yet the words are still as powerful today as they were when Kipling wrote them.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And has he endorsed your book?
Brad Stevens?
Yes.
He actually, it was great. It was one of those honest moments that I really respect in a leader.
Mm-hmm.
I had called him in December of last year to ask him for the quote, and he responded very frankly. He said, "Look, I don't have time to read anything, and I won't endorse something I haven't fully read."
Okay.
And so he's committed that this summer he's going to read it, and I can't wait to get a quote from him about the book itself. But he loves the idea of it, and I wish him the best, and he's wished me the best as well. So
excellent, excellent, excellent. And who are some of your heroes and people who have demonstrated the type of if leadership that you can say, yes, this person is really living the values?
Well, you know, it's funny. The book is full of them. I really had to pick and choose among some of my favorite historical figures and everyday figures. So when you read the book, you'll see that every chapter has a story of a historical figure that starts the chapter who demonstrates a specific leadership attribute. And it ends, every chapter ends with what I call everyday examples. And the everyday examples include my wife and my children and good friends, my son's godfather, people who have really made an impact in my life. I like to hold people like that up as heroes as much as I hold up these historically great figures. But I'm not going to, get off the hook that easily. I'll tell you some of the specifics. My mom and dad are clearly some of the heroes that are most present in my life. I lost my father last year, but he's still a hero to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's one person in the book that is both a bigger-than-life hero and an everyday hero, because he's somebody I know. He's the only person I wrote about in a historical sense that I know personally, and that's a gentleman named Captain James Mulligan. And I remember when he came home from Vietnam in 1972, after 6.5 years as a POW, I was a boy. I was only 7 years old when he came home, but I still remember it very vividly. As I was growing up, he lived a block from us, so I got to know him pretty well. We attended the same church, and he often taught at our religious education classes. And I feel like it was an honor getting to know this man who demonstrated such extraordinary leadership and serving his country. Yeah, but so he's one of those people who kind of crosses the boundaries of a bigger than life hero and somebody I know personally. I'm a huge fan of President Ronald Reagan as a person who knew who he was and why he believed what he did. I think so many politicians this day, in these days, and both sides of the aisle, have lost their way. They don't know who they are because they haven't taken the time to invest in themselves to know what really motivates them. And I really think the country loved Reagan so much because he did, regardless of whether you agreed with him or not, people respected him because of his convictions and the fact that he knew what he stood for. There's also another character or another person in the book that I wrote about that is a little less known than some of the others, a guy named Michael Collins. He is an Irish revolutionary, and like Dr. King died and was assassinated well before his time. They were about the same age when they were killed. But was one of these people who did so much in his life, and so those two in the book really are right. They were very close to each other as far as that when I wrote the chapters, and it struck me the parallels between Dr. King and Michael Collins. Both were revolutionaries in their own way, and really stood for things that weren't very popular, and were willing to take stands that ultimately cost them their lives. And I think that's the kind of thing that leadership is about, making sacrifice. Now, I'm not telling people I have to go out and get killed to be a leader, but the great leaders understand that it's not easy and it's not about a popularity contest. It's about standing for things regardless of the outcome.
You know, being a leader sometimes is a very lonely place, and it is a position of service. You're there to serve the people that you are leading. And taking decisions that are fair, decisions sometimes means that your best friend doesn't get their way.
Right.
Or someone who is a favorite employee who might end up doing something that wasn't smart, and that has to be addressed. And people have to know it's being addressed fairly, so that folks know that it's fair and balanced in the office.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. Sometimes it's we're hardest on those that disappoint us the most, right? And so I know that in my own leadership experience that sometimes the people who I had the strongest relationships with and who I admired the most as people who, on my team that really had the greatest potential and the greatest performers, if they let me down, I often found myself being more hard on them than I would have been on somebody else. And I'm not sure that's fair, and I'm not sure it's right, but it's part of human nature that we have to do. In our desire to be fair, sometimes we oversteer where with the people who matter most to us.
You know, I have found myself in that same position, so I can attest that it is a very, very tough thing. I am tougher on those who I think are my better players.
Absolutely.
Because you know that they understand you and they know what your expectations are in regards to that. And so when they don't come through, it is very disappointing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what is one of your favorite quotes about leadership that you like to share with our audience?
So, I really love, there's a lot of great quotes out there. One of my favorite quotes about life and leadership is it's an anonymous quote. My father used to say it all the time, and it stuck with me. And he used to tell me, for every complex problem, there's a simple answer, and it's usually wrong. And the reason I use that around leadership is that in my book, I talk about the leadership paradox. Leadership, in many ways, is very simple. It's straightforward. It's about being aware of the choices that are available to us and making the choices. It's about being aware of who we are and living in alignment with who we are. So it's very simple to lead well, but it's also, hugely complex. And so those people who take it too lightly, who don't invest enough in leadership, often are the ones who get themselves in the greatest trouble. They think it's easy, and therefore they try and they don't put the energy into it they need to. And I was victim of that many times myself. And so I think that quote really resonates with me. There's another good one that I love around leadership that is pretty provocative. And I was at a class at Darden at the University of Virginia a few years ago, and the instructor said, and I don't know where they got the quote, but it was a husband and wife team, Jack and Carol Webber, were teaching this leadership program out there. And they said, leadership is the ability to get others to do what they would otherwise think was inappropriate or impossible. And I'm misquoting it. I'm just reading this, reeling this off out of my head because it stuck with me. It's provocative because you think, wait a minute, you're getting somebody to do something that they would otherwise think was inappropriate. Is that right or is it wrong? And their point was, leadership isn't about right or wrong necessarily. It is about getting people to act. And, there is no goodness or badness of leadership. There are a lot of evil people who have been very effective leaders. And our ability to get somebody to do something that they would otherwise think was impossible or inappropriate kind of epitomizes that ability to drive change. And if we're driving change for good, then getting people to see that what they otherwise, again, going back to Dr. King, there are a lot of people in the country who saw the civil rights movement as being, there was nothing inappropriate about the way African Americans were treated in this country, according to many people in the country back in the 50s and 60s. Dr. King got people to think differently about that.
Mm-hmm.
He got
mm-hmm.
them to change their view about what was appropriate versus inappropriate.
Right.
And so that's, the first time I heard that quote, it bothered me. the more I thought about it and the more I've come to think about leadership and study leadership, the more I love it. I think it's just an amazingly powerful concept.
It truly is. I have not heard that before, but I'm happy that you share that, because it really makes you want to look at things differently, because what you think is appropriate might be inappropriate. As a leader, you want somebody to change what they think is appropriate behavior, but you see it as inappropriate behavior. Wow, what a paradox.
Exactly.
Yes, yes. You know, we have a few minutes left for this program, and I want to make sure that folks know how to reach you and contact you. If you could you share with our audience your website that you have?
Sure. It's www.ifyouwillead.com. Just like it sounds, IFYOUWILLEAD.
Wonderful. And let's talk about your practice. What are some of the type of assignments that you take on as a executive coach or leadership coach?
As a leadership and executive coach, most of the work I do is one-on-one. I work with individual executives who are trying to become better leaders, and it sounds simplistic, but that's what we do. And it's a lot of one-on-one self-discovery, trying to figure out, okay, what's getting in their way, what's holding them back, and you know, what can they do to overcome those obstacles. And I do some consulting, and even when I'm coaching, I take my coaching hat off and put on a consulting hat and give advice at times. But part of what I love about coaching, both as a coach now and as a client of coaching in the past, is that coaching is built on the premise that the client has all the answers themselves. My job as a coach is just to ask them.
So, Doug, you were saying that the individuals have the answers within themselves.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's one of the fundamental premises of coaching. One of the, you know, the Georgetown program in particular focuses on that it's not about fixing somebody who's broken. It's not about telling people the answers. It's about taking somebody from a position that we are all whole and very capable and able to solve our problems. And the coach is there to help pull it out, help ask the questions that allow somebody to discover what's holding them back. And, you know, as we started the conversation, when I was working with a coach, a woman by the name of Wendy Swire, who was probably one of the best coaches I've ever met and worked with, she helped me see that what I really was about, what I really needed to be doing, was writing this book and moving into this field of leadership coaching. She never once said, "Doug, you should be doing this." Yeah, it was through question and answer, through probing, through exploring what really mattered to me and helping me see where there was alignment in my life and where there was misalignment, by just asking those hard questions and not letting me off the hook, she helped me discover that this is what I was called to do. And that's what I love about coaching, and that's why I do it. It's what it's a real calling, as I said, because it gives me the opportunity to play that kind of role in people's lives.
Well, you know, Doug, we are out of time, and I know the audience is saying, "Wait a minute, where's the story about the rest of the book?" Well, you're going to come back with us next week, correct?
Absolutely, can't wait.
Great. So we are here with Mr. Doug Moran, founder of If You Will Lead, LLC, and he is the author of the book, If You Will Lead, Enduring Wisdom for 21st Century Leaders. Doug, thank you for your time today, and we're looking forward to having you back on the program next week.
It's been a pleasure, Darrell. Thanks for having me.
This is Darrell Gunter, your host of Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM, Seton Hall University. Remember, leadership begins with you. Have a great day.